Friday the 23rd of April, Tess E.R. Rabbi Joseph Freilich, One's Attitude to Others.
Well, we are here today, the Seder Achrei Moed Kedoshim. These are Seders which are absolutely packed full of mitzvahs. I've got a big choice to pick out any mitzvah in these Seders. And I was very tempted to pick out the mitzvah of Lifnei Ivel Al-Sitei Mitzvah. But I thought if I do that, you know, you will only, I'll be matching everybody and talking Lashon Hara about me and saying all sorts of things. So I decided in the end I would speak about Lashon Hara. Because also this week said, Laisei Leklochil V'Yamecho. Now I know that Yanky Wiesenfeld, he went through the whole proper time, with you over a period of time, and you've gone into all ins and outs of Lashon Hara, and everybody is fully conversant with the halachos of Lashon Hara, and you know everything about it. So I thought that would be a challenge, to speak to people who know everything about it, and yet to tell them something new about Lashon Hara. So I'd like to maybe share some thoughts with you, and some interesting things which I've heard, and which probably Yaakov Wiesenfeld didn't tell you about. The Torah says, in Pashat Kiseitzei, Hishome benega tzaras, be careful with the nega of tzaras, watch it, be careful that you don't get tzaras. Zocha is a sha'oso Hashem le Miriam, v'derech v'tzeistam im Mitzrayim. Remember what the Kodesh Baruch Hu did to Miriam, when you were on your way out of Mitzrayim and you were in the Midbar, and she spoke, Lashon Hara, about Moshe Rabbeinu, and she was struck down with tzaras. So it's a nice way of telling people, be careful, Lashon Hara, saying, be careful of tzaras. You don't want to get tzaras, so always remember what the Kodesh Baruch Hu did to Miriam, v'derech v'tzeistam im Mitzrayim. And I always used to wonder, what is this phrase, v'derech v'tzeistam im Mitzrayim? Who cares where it was? Miriam, she spoke Lashon Hara, she got tzaras. It's a difference, whether it was in Timbuktu or Honolulu, she spoke tzaras. Remember, she spoke Lashon Hara, she got tzaras. What is v'derech v'tzeistam im Mitzrayim? And I once heard from Rabbi Bernstein, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, he was giving a shiur, and he pointed to a Rashbam. He had a genius for noticing little things in Rashbam and so forth, and that everybody would just pass over, and he would pick them out, and he would bring them to your attention. And this is little Rashbam. If you read it, you wouldn't know what he was talking about. You would just go over it, and you wouldn't really realize what he's saying. But in essence, what he's saying is this. See, there's also that there was a din that when the Bnei Yisrael walked in the Midbar, then the format of how they went through the Midbar is they had to have the three leaders had to walk in front. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam had to walk in front of the people. That's a pasuk based on a pasuk in Michal, that Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam and Lefalecho, that, you know, if they're not, if you haven't got those three people in front, then you can't go. Alive, you can't, later on they die, but while they're here, you mustn't be missing any of your leaders. So, if Miriam is going to be stuck down with tzaras, and she's going to be in Mechutz LaMachaneh for 7 days, so it means you're going to hold up the whole oilam from traveling forward. It's not just, you know, just a little thing. You're here, you've got millions of people with their wives and children, and they're on the way, and they're expecting in a few days, we are hoping to be arriving at this soil. This was, of course, before the Meraglim, they hadn't, it wasn't a question of 40 years, in a few days' time, they were expecting to be in Eretz soil, and suddenly, they're going to be held up here, the entire, millions of people are going to be held up, you know, for 7 days. And we've seen this week what it's like, you know, and people are having for 5 days or 4 days, you're dead, and it's not millions, it's just thousands of people hanging around an airport, and you know, you're hanging around, we want to move, then we want to get there, what are we hanging around for? And even if you know why, but it's very annoying. So you would think that under such circumstances, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would waive the punishment and would say, look, I'll be martyred this time, you know, I can't punish her. But punish her means inconveniencing the whole oil of that. I just can't punish her now. So the Baruch Hu said, no. Lashon Hara is such a serious matter, it's got to be punished. And he had to punish her even though it was Bederach B'tzeisam in Mitzrayim. You were under those circumstances where it inconvenienced millions of people, but she had to, it couldn't go unpunished. And then once you imbibe that lesson, then you make a Kal V'Chomer to yourself, and the only person who sees, not Miriam, and the person spoken about is not Moshe Rabbeinu, who is an honor, who doesn't need your mind. And you're not holding up millions of people, of course a Kaddish Baruch Hu will give a severe punishment. You look in the Rashbam there, the Apostle, and see whether you can, would have spotted that. So, why does the Ribbono Shel Olam give such a terrible punishment for Lashon Hara? Well, we all know the Gemara that says that Lashon Hara kills three people. Number one, kills the person who you're speaking about, you're ruining his reputation, person standing in the eyes of others. You can literally ruin a person's life, his business, his merchandise, his professionalism, his job prospects. There's no limit. I remember reading a few years ago, there was a case in Yerushalayim. There were two girls sitting on a bus, and they were chatting about a third girl, and they were saying all sorts of uncomplimentary things about her. You know, the way girls are going to chat this, and now you heard this. And after a few minutes, you know, the lady who was sitting in front of them turned around and said, you know, I just couldn't help overhearing what you said about, let's go to Rivka Cohen. Nobody has got a called Rivka Cohen, right? It's the article of Sarah Levy, yeah, but whoever it is, it was a different Rivka Cohen. So, you know, she said, I couldn't help overhearing what you said about her. And I was really glad I heard what you said, because my son has been going out with her, and he's just at the point of getting engaged, and we never knew about this aspect of her character and her midas, and I was so happy to hear this, and yet Hashem, I'm going straight home, I'm going to tell my son we're going to break off the shidduch. And the dad said, oh no, we're terribly sorry, you know, we didn't mean it, we don't want to cause any trouble. No, don't be sorry, you know, there's nothing wrong, you know, I'm very pleased about it, that you told me. And, you know, he said, no, he said, you know, we were just talking, lady, we were exaggerating. She's really, you know, she's a lovely girl, she's not like that at all. He said, look, you don't have to justify yourself, you know, you did nothing wrong, maybe you did wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, I've diminished your mind that I heard this because I'm able to go home and be ready, and Chas v'Shalom, I don't want my son to marry a girl like that. And, you know, she said, she turned around, and, you know, the girls were shtum, you know, didn't know what to do with themselves. And after about 10 minutes, when this lady came to our bus stop, as she was getting off the bus, she turned to the girls and said, you know, I've got no idea who Rivka Cohen is, I don't know her, and my son is not getting engaged to her, but he could have been. And that was a lesson which I'm sure the girls imbibed. You've got no idea how much damage one can do. You know, the old saying, we always say, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. This silly jingle, you know, which is, couldn't be further from the truth. You know, sticks and stones can break your bones, so you go to hospital and it's set it in plaster, and it can be repaired. But the damage which is done through Lashon Hara can last a lifetime, and very often you really kill somebody, you can't repair it. That's why it says at the end of the Pasuk, La'aseilech rafa b'mecho, and it says, Lai Samar al Damriecho, and don't stand by the blood of your friend, you're spilling somebody's blood. Secondly, the Gemara says it kills the Shamea, the person who hears the Lashon Hara. You've ruined for him, you've ruined, he's held this person in high esteem, and now by hearing Lashon Hara about him, you've ruined him. You know, he's now, he hasn't got that same relationship with him anymore. And this is a terrible thing. I always remember it. So it sticks in my mind to this day. It was many, many years ago. There was somebody in this community who I held in very high respect. And then somebody said to me, oh, you know, that person, he's always doing this. You know what he does is he only does it because of this and this and this, you know. And he ran out of this person. And I said to myself, ah, rubbish, you know, I don't believe it. I'm sure he's not doing it for that reason. No, it's not Emerson. Putting it out on, forget about it. And I couldn't forget about it. You know, once it's in your mind, you can't forget about it. To this day, you know, it's 30 years ago, to this day, it's still there. You can't, it's a funny thing, that everything that you do in this world, whatever you do, you can undo it. Right? If you build a table, make a table. You know, you can smash up the table, you can build a skyscraper, you can knock down a skyscraper. Everything you do, you can undo. You put something on your computer, you press a delete button, and boom, it's gone. And you can manage to delete it. There's ways of really deleting it if you know how to do it. But in your mind, once something goes in, once you hear something, this is something that can't be undone. There's no mechanism of saying, look, I want to forget it, put it out of my mind, press the delete button, boom. There's no delete button. You cannot get it out of your mind. And I say, to this day, I still remember it. And I said, I wish I wouldn't have heard that. I wish that person wouldn't have said it to me, you know. But there's nothing to do about it. You know, as far as this person's gone, they've killed me for this person. And thirdly, there's the Madhavi, the person who's saying Lashon Hara himself. Of course, the Lashon Hara kills him. A, he gets a tremendous oilish, you know, min ha-shamayim. But also, you know, it kills his middos, and it'll kill his esteem in the eyes of other people. You know, people are always going around talking Lashon Hara about others. Now we're going to say in next week's Perek, Ezim Chubad Hamachabid is a Brias. Who is an honored person? He who honors other people. And I always say, the opposite must be true as well then. Somebody who always despises other people, always runs other people down, and they'll take a bit of Lashon Hara, a little tittle-tattle, and he gets a laugh. And you see, he thinks he's awfully popular because he's always got a little bit of, you know, these gossip mongers, you know, they're trading in gossip, you know, just like a fishmonger trades in fish. So a gossip monger, see, that's his trade. Wherever he goes, he's got something to sell and he's popular. But really, people don't like him. He doesn't realize that although they're laughing, you know, while he's talking to them, but after he goes away, they're thinking about, what do you think he's saying about me? The same as he's talking about another person, Igabito, and these people are the end despised. So people have got sort of this terrible habit of, you know, talking about and sticking labels onto people, you know, which is something which can become such a habit. One has to work on oneself to snap out of it. I know people, we all know people like that, who whatever, you know, somebody does something, somebody says something. I heard the other day, somebody said, didn't agree with him, sat in. He thought he'd made a mistake. You know, this other person, a lot of time comes and said, it's an Amoritz. You know, they say, it's an Amoritz. You know, don't think you can say, look, I don't agree, I don't think he's overlooked something, you know, there could be a difference. But don't just label him, you know, yeah, he's an Amoritz, he's a Yekke, he's a Mizrachimik, he's a Chabatska, you know, with one word, you know, you've labeled somebody, and it's oismensch, you know, you can't, so those things, you know, you mustn't do. And you've got to be careful, even with our own children. You know, we tend to do it, you say to a child, you know, you label him, you know, you're a naughty boy. You know, you've spilled, you're a shlemazel, you know. Okay, the child feels now, he's been labeled, I'm a shlemiel, you know, I'm a naughty boy, this is what I am. Don't say, you are this and this. You know, say, you know, that wasn't very nice of you to do that, you know, you shouldn't have done that, you shouldn't have said that. You must be more careful next time, don't knock it over. But don't say, you are a shlemazel. So, we have to be sort of very careful in that. And, you know, these are the things, because it kills us. So, although it's such a great killer, yet we know there's tremendous Yetzer Hara for Lashon Hara, and the Gemara says, HaKoyin Nechshorim, the Lashon Hara, everybody is Nechshel in the veil of Lashon Hara. The Gemara says, really, Lashon Hara? Okay, maybe not Lashon Hara Manish, but Avak Lashon Hara, he's the dust of Lashon Hara. Now, some people think, you know, well, listen, I'm not really King Lashon Hara, I just made it to the market, it's not really Lashon Hara, it's just a Mac Lashon Hara. But, you know, dust, we've seen this week, you know, dust can be a very dangerous thing. Dust can be a killer. You know? We're all learning a lot of lessons that we can learn, you know, from the Sebi, you know, and what's happened this week. So, it's a strange thing. I remember I once had a new girl, a new Paris Chuba came to us, and I arranged for her to go for Shabbos to go to lunch to a certain family. And I still remember this sort of later on, the next day she said to me, you know, that family that you just sent me to, you know, are they kosher? You know, is all that food kosher? I said, well, of course it's kosher. You know, I wouldn't send you to a family where not kosher. I said, oh, really? So, you know, how do you know that it's all kosher? Well, I said, they're from people. You know, I wouldn't send you to somebody who's not a from person. I said, oh, really? Are they from people? I said, what's your, you know, why are you surprised? What's your doubt? There's one thing we're talking about, Lashon Hara, the table. You know, you mustn't switch your light on Shabbos, and you mustn't eat food which is not kosher, and you mustn't speak Lashon Hara. If she sees people, they're just talking Lashon Hara freely at the table. So obviously, they're not, she can understand that people who don't keep mitzvahs, and so these are people who are not that frum, and they don't do what you're supposed to do. So how do they know that their food is kosher? Now, of course, with us, we smile, when we hear this. Why do we smile? Because somehow we don't take it seriously. We're quite used to the phenomenon that you've got somebody who can trust his kashrus 100% and not the slightest bit kosher that's going to give me tray for food. But Lashon Hara, it's just Lashon Hara. We don't take it serious. So we've got to stop it. And how do we stop it? What is the Eitzer against this terrible Eitzer Hara? Well, Ribbono Shel Olam tried a certain Eitzer, and it didn't work. The Pasuk says, the Pasuk said that Ribbono Shel Olam says, what can I do? I've tried everything. I've tried to control the tongue. I've put two guards in front of the tongue. I've put the teeth and the lips. I've got two guards, two gates in front of the tongue, and yet the tongue still manages to rather, what more can I get my yoyser of Loshima, what more can I do? I can't do any more. I'm helpless, so to speak, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And I always taken this Gemara, and I've taken it one step further. There was a man, he lives in Hendon, I think, still, maybe still doing this. He's a very wealthy man, and he was always afraid he was going to get burned, and something was going to happen to his house, somebody. And he hired two security guards to sit for 24 hours a day outside his house in a van, sitting there all the time, got to watch his house. He got a rota of security guards to watch his house. I remember once I came to visit this man, as soon as I came near the front door, he sort of jumped out of, who are you, what's your name, what do you want here, have you got an appointment? But they're there to guard the house. When he goes away on holidays, he doesn't have to worry about burglars. He's got these two security guards who look after his house. So I thought, imagine they're a bit lackadaisical in their duties, and they sit in the van and they go to sleep, a burglar's come, the man comes back from holidays and he finds his whole house is burgled. Oh, what's happening? Security, they didn't do their job properly. The burglar managed to do it even with a security guard. He'd be very annoyed by the guards. What do you think I'm paying you for? You're not guarding my house properly. But imagine you had a worse scenario than that. Imagine these two security guards. They're talking to each other, they've got nothing to do but sit there all day. I said, how much is this fellow paying us, to do this job? We could make much more money by going in collusion with the burglars. And, we'll tell the burglars, we'll tip them off, we'll tell them when the fellow's away on holidays, we'll tell them how to get in, and how we'll help him to do the burglary, and we'll share the spoils. Now imagine a man comes back from holidays and he finds that not only has been burgled, but these guards who he's hired, these are the ones who've helped them. He'd be furious. And this is what's happening. The Rebbeinu puts these two guards to stop the tongue from talking Lashon Hara. And not only don't they do their job properly, they're not efficient as they should be, but they actually help the tongue to talk Lashon Hara. Without your teeth, without your lips, the tongue could talk very little. How much Lashon Hara? The tongue couldn't do very much, You have to have the teeth and the lips. So these are supposed to be the guards. They're actually in collusion with the tongue, and they help the tongue to talk the Lashon Hara. So what can we do? What other eitzes are there? Well, the Chofetz Chaim tried, as I'm sure you learned with Yankee, and Sefer. He counts up, how many lavim and how many essays and how many things you're over. And tremendous amount of avarice which a person is over in talking Lashon Hara. And if you tell more people, of course, then it's even more. And, I always say, I think I've said this before, I always think of journalists, the media. They have people whose profession is they are gossip writers, they write a gossip column, and they're paid to write, to dig out mud and to find out, what the celebrities are doing and what's happening in their marriage, and they've got to actually dig out Lashon Hara. People love to read it, and if you write, they enjoy it, they've got a malicious pleasure in screwing somebody up and talking about them, knocking somebody down. And I thought, somebody doing this, you get an enormous amount of avarice that they clock up. If you turn Russian to one person, you've got one avarice. But if you've got a circulation in your paper, you've got a circulation of 100,000 people, and everybody in every family is five people, they read the papers, you've got 500, you've talked, you've said your losses of 500,000 people. So by just writing a little column, you've clocked up 500,000 availers. I mean, it's enormous, you know, when you think of any other availer you can think of, you know, eating hazard, you know, a person would eat hazard, has for sure. So you're over an availer. But you know how long it would take you to eat 500,000 gazes of hazard, you know? I don't think in a whole lifetime you could eat so much hazard. And yet this journalist, he can manage, you know, with a one stroke of the pen, with one little paragraph, he writes, oh, I'm writing this, I've seen this piece which I've written, oh, this celebrity dame gets screwed up, and he gets his pleasure out of it. Then what he'd be in Gehenna, I always say, in Gehenna, you know, I'd have hold front row seats, you know, one right next to the fire, you know, it's got notes on them, you know, reserved for the press. This is it, you know, relieve, you know, the amount of trouble that's caused, you know, journalists, media, you know, they're talking about Jews, about Israel, about everything, the amount of harm, you know, which they do, the number of people which they kill, they'd be there in the fire to really, you know, they're digging out evil. I once heard, there was a, you know, some people have got a minig that when you do Bedikas Chometz, after Bedikas Chometz, then they take the Chometz, you know, which they've collected, and the feather, and the candle, and the whole lot. And they burn the whole lot. And the Chosid once asked his Rebbe, he says, you know, I don't understand this minig. I understand the Chometz you've got to burn, but not his Chometz. And the feather, you know, swept up the Chometz, you've got to burn the feather. But the candle, you know, why do you have to burn the candle? Now, if you would have asked me, I would have said, well, you throw in the camp out to make the fire better. It burns much better when you wear a candle in it. But, you know, I'm not a Rebbe. And the Rebbe gave a different answer. He said, you know, Chometz is a representation of evil. It's a Ra, it's a Acher, it's the Oysha B'Isa. Chometz is evil. And a candle that goes around looking for evil, that needs to get burnt. So, it's a beautiful thought. So, this is what the Chofetz Chaim did here, elaborating how many availers we do. Other people, you know, I knew a family in Gateshead where they decided we're going to have a system of fines for Rosh Hashanah. In our family, anytime somebody talks Rosh Hashanah, you've got to put a pound in the tzedakah box. And it worked for a few days. And then, you know, the wife came home one night and said, yeah, you know what I've heard? I've got to tell you this. I don't care for calling me wife. I don't want to tell you this. So, you know, that was, I've got limited health as well. I thought to myself, really, the best way of stopping talking Rosh Hashanah is, no, not doing it in the negative way, that we've got to control ourselves, hold your mouth, don't talk Rosh Hashanah. Oh, the body muscles and muscles, einhalten. You know, there's a limit to how much we can einhalten, how much we can control ourselves. I think it would be far better to take away the whole urge of saying the Rosh Hashanah. There are ways of making it so I don't even want to talk the Rosh Hashanah. And I thought one way is that if we consider that there are certain things that people do, you see people doing things that are not nice things, but it could be outside their range of Bechira. You know, I don't want to give a whole talk about Bechira now, but you know, we only have a limited part of the spectrum of our activities in which we've got free will to choose. There are other things which we can't help. And the family's been brought up that way, or he's had experiences in life, or he's been diddled by other people. You know, it's made him that way, and I mean, he can't even help it. You know, he's a Holocaust survivor, a new man. You know, fairly enough, he used to talk, terrible language he used to talk, and things he used to do, and it was not a pleasant person. But I was once visiting him when he was in a hospital, and I visited him, and he was telling me about his experiences and the concentration camps, and I came out and decided, you know, I never ever got to even have an opinion about somebody who's been in the concentration camps, who's a Holocaust survivor. You know, we cannot judge, nobody dare even make a judgment, never mind talking Rosh Hashanah. But even in your own mind, it's our attitude to others that matters. If you've got this attitude, oh, he's this, he's that, but if you realize that, look, this person never, oh, it's not right what he's doing, you know, I wouldn't like my children to do that, but he, you know, he can't help it, he's been in circumstances and so on, you know, once you take that attitude, if you can't help it, then you don't want to talk an awful lot about it. Like somebody breaks his leg and he's on a walk, like this. You don't go out and hurt him. See Mr. Sons, stupid man, he walks, He can't help it, he's broken his leg. It's nothing exciting to talk lots of rap about, that he can't help it. Right? So once you realise that things can be outside there, then it's mevatel the whole taiva of talking lots of rap, and you've eliminated that. So, we try sort of, don't be judgmental of others, sort of judge them, be done the mechafs chus. But Sevik Tishvan is Ami Sechel, in fact that's a previous posul to Lai Sedech Rochel Bamecho. But Sevik Tishvan Ami Sechel, if you don't people have schus, then Lai Sedech Rochel Bamecho, then don't go around. You don't, automatically you don't, everybody will have schus, there's nothing to talk about. But I had another point, and that is, we all know the famous story about the Reucher, the peddler who went around, and he had an opponent came out and said, what are you peddling? I've got Samu the Chaya, got the elixir of life. What is it? It's a posuk. Miho isha chofetz chayim. Mitzayim shaycho miro. We all know that. But people always leave out the middle bit of that posuk. It's miho isha chofetz chayim. Oyev yomim lirois toiv. Now this is something which people forget about. And this is something maybe which we should concentrate on rather than concentrate on the negative. Lira is thought to see good. Everybody in this world, has got good things. There's lots of good things that we do. And we all have our foibles, And somebody who just constantly only looks on is a negative. Oh, this person, this one. You go around with that sort of attitude, you just see all the bad people, Then that brings you lots around. If you decide, I'm not interested to see the bad in people. I don't want to see it. I'm not looking at it, I want everybody's got, look at this person, look what a nice thing, look at the railing, look at this child, look how this little girl is looking after her little brother, look how nice it is, look at this person, how he treats his mother. There's so many nice, look for good, and there's a lot of good to find out. There's such a goodness in people that they do what they help, what seductive they give, what chesed they do. There's such a good, concentrate your mind and look for these good things, And then in that case, don't focus on the bad. A professor was once talking to his students. He had a big whiteboard, and he put a little black dot in the middle, and he said to his students, what can you see here? They said, a black dot. He said, there's such a big expanse of white. All you saw was one little black dot. So we've got to sort of train our eyes to look at the white part, to look at the good part, and you can train yourself to do that. If a person wears rose-colored glasses, pink glasses. So we know anybody's learned a bit of physics. What it does is it filters out all the light. It only allows the pink light to come through. So everything looks pink and rosy because it only allows the pink light to go through. So we can train ourselves to wear toy glasses. glasses that only let the toy come through. I'm not interested in a negative thing. Somebody said this person, I'm not looking at it, I just want to see the good thing. Unless I'll have some need, obviously, if I'm going to be in a sharif with him, or I'm going to go into a business partnership with him, or I'm going to appoint him as a headmaster of my school, obviously I need to look. He might have negative sides to him, which make him unsuitable. But to judge him as a person, I don't want to see the bad. I just want to wear my point glasses, and I want to be able to see the good in everybody. And, if we take this sort of attitude to other people, you take a generous and benevolent and kindly attitude to others, then, we will love our society. Every day will be a pleasure. I'm living among such nice people. I love my days. I'm oyev yomim, lirais toiv. Every day I go out, I live in such a lovely society. And so, I don't even want to speak about it. Such nice people, there's nothing to speak bad about. I think this is a good eitzah for Lashon Hara. But I say one more little thing, and with this I want to finish, that we all know the posuk, Mogos v'chaim v'yad v'loshen. Life and death is in the hand of the tongue. And people always interpret that to mean, the tongue is very dangerous, you can kill somebody with your tongue, as we've just said now. And that's true, you can kill somebody with your tongue. But killing somebody, that's Mogos. The posuk says, Mogos v'chaim v'yad v'loshen. Life is also in the hand of the tongue. If we learn how to use our tongue, you can use your tongue in a good way, and you can give chiyus to somebody. It's so easy, you know, if you think about it, you meet somebody who's a bit depressed, he's a bit downhearted, he's a bit insecure. You know, you say a good word to him, you've mamish given him an encouragement. You know, who it is, even our children, they need encouragement. Even our spouses, you know, they need encouragement. And it's so important. For some reason, many people feel it difficult. They can't, you know, even husbands and wives, they just can't get themselves and say, oh, you know, it was lovely what you did. Oh, it's marvelous what you did. Oh, it's lovely what you're wearing. But, you know, to say a good thing which will make the other person happy, it's got to be genuine, you know, can't be fake. But if you actually train yourself to see all the good things, then you can say it, and we all need it. Every one of us, let's make no mistake about it. The most successful man, the wealthiest man, the biggest Talmud Chacham, the biggest Rosh Yeshiva, and all Bochurim will come to it, if he feels that his wife doesn't really appreciate him very much, doesn't have no admiration for him, then, you know, he'll suffer from that. If she says in a book, I see that here from the Bochurim how much they enjoy, you know, going to your Shia, and you know, she gets, you know, he'll get something which you need. And so therefore, you know, if we do this, we are not, you know, we always have the monkeys, you know, we say, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. But, you know, I say, we are not monkeys, you know, we are Yidden. And we shouldn't just be negative. Our motto is we should see good, and we should, you know, realize time, and we should hear good, and we should speak good. Use our tongue in that good. So if we put all these ideas into practice, then we and our friends, we'll all be happier people, and the world will be a better place to live in.